Ben, finally, grimacing after he swallowed the amber liquid. Christ, that's Swin. He threw the rest of the liquid into the fire. She raised a brow at the action.
You disdain the title and the scotch it buys.
First, that should not be called scotch. It is rotgut at best.
He paused.
And second, I do not disdain the title. I dislike it.
Yes, you poor put-upon man, having one of the wealthiest and most venerable dukedoms in history simply land in your lap. How difficult it must be to live your horrid, entitled existence.
He had no idea the power he had, the privilege, what she would do to have the same.
He leaned back in the small chair.
I spend my own money, earned honestly in Scotland. I have ensured the tenants and staff who rely upon the dukedom continue to prosper, but as I did not ask for the title, I do not interact with its spoils.
Myself included. She could not resist the words.
I'm here, am I not? Summoned south by my ward. Surely that counts for something.
I didn't summon you.
You might not have set pen to paper, lass, but you summoned me as simply as if you'd shouted my name across the border.
As I said, I've no need for you.
I'm told the world disagrees.
Hang the world, she said, turning her attention to the fire as she added, and hang you with it.
As I'm here to save you, I would think you'd be much more grateful.
The man's arrogance was quite remarkable. However did I come to be so very lucky? He sighed, hearing the sarcasm in her words.
Despite your petulance, I am here to rectify your alleged...
He cast about for an appropriate word.
Situation.
Her brows shot together. My petulance.
Do you deny it?
She most certainly did. Petulance is what a child feels when she is denied sweets.
How would you describe yourself if not petulant?
Furious, foolish, irritated, desperate, ashamed. Finally, she spoke. It is no matter. It's all too little too late. After a pause, she added pointedly, I've a plan, and you are not a part of it, Duke. He cut her a look.
I suppose I shouldn't have told you I don't like the title.
Never reveal your weakness to your enemy.
We are enemies, then.
We certainly aren't friends. She could see his frustration.
I've had enough of this. Why don't we begin here? Settlesworth tells me you've ruined yourself in front of all London.
The words, no matter how often she thought them herself, still stung on another's tongue. Shame flooded her, and she did everything she could not to reveal it. She failed. How is it that the ruination is mine and not... She stopped. He heard the rest of the sentence nonetheless.
Then there was a man.
She met his gaze. You needn't pretend you don't know.
It is not pretending, he said. Settlesworth gave me very little information. But I am not an idiot, and looking at you, it's clear that there was a man.
Looking at me? He had no idea how the words stung. He ignored her.
So, you did not ruin yourself. You were ruined.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other, she mumbled.
No,
he said firmly.
They are different.
Not to anyone who matters. A pause.
What happened?
He did not know. It was remarkable. He did not know what she had done, how she had embarrassed herself. He had only the vagaries of a solicitor's summons and the boundaries of his imagination. And in those vagaries she remained, somehow, free of the past. And though she knew it was simply a matter of time before he heard about the scandal of Lovely Lily, Lonesome Lily, Lovelorn Lily, or whatever nickname the scandal sheets thought clever today, she did not wish him to know now. And so she did not tell him. Does it matter? He looked at her as though she was mad.
Of course it matters.
She shook her head. It doesn't, though. Not really. It only matters what they believe. That is how scandal works.
Facts matter, Lillian. Tell me what happened. If they make it worse than it is, I will paper London with truth.
"How lucky I am to have a guardian and a champion all in one," she said, injecting the words with sarcasm in the hopes she could irritate him into leaving his line of questioning. He whispered something in Gaelic then, something that she did not understand, but that she immediately identified as a curse. He tugged at the cravat, tied too tight around his neck, just as the coat he wore was too tight at the shoulders, the trousers too tight at the thighs. Everything about this man was larger than it should be. Perhaps that was why he knew instantly her truth, that he saw her flaws so clearly. Flaws saw flaws. He returned to English.
"We cannot solve this situation if I do not know its particulars."
"There is no we, Your Grace." The words were firm and full of conviction. "Until today, you did not know me."
"I will know soon enough, girl."
But not from her, and somehow, ridiculously, that was important. Somehow it meant that she could be something with him she was not with others. "You needn't concern yourself with it," she said. "In 10 days my situation will be resolved, one way or another." If she said it enough, it might be believed. She might believe it herself.
"What happens in 10 days?
"The painting is revealed. Not just that. I turn 24.
"And?"
Alec leaned forward in his chair, elbows on his knees, fingers laced together. "And the painting is revealed in front of all London." She looked to him, ignoring the thought. It wouldn't matter. She had a plan. "And according to the rules of my guardianship, I receive the funds necessary to leave London, and my scandal behind." His brows rose.
"That must be a great deal of blunt loss, if it can erase you from memory."
"Oh, it is," she said. "I can leave London and never return." "So you see, Your Grace," she said, allowing triumph into her voice. "I have a plan to save myself. No guardian required. I plan to run." She hated the plan, hated the way it ended with Derek winning, with London winning, with a life she desired out of reach. But she had no choice. There was no other way to survive the scandal that would mark her forever. Alec watched her for a long moment before nodding once and leaning back in his chair, dwarfing the furniture with his sheer size.
"That's one way of saving yourself."
She did not like the phrasing. "One way."
"Do you love him?"
She went pale at the words. "What?"
"The man. Do you love him?"
"I have not acknowledged that there is a man."
"There is always a man, lass."
"We were to be married." The tears again, hot and angry and instant and unwelcome. She willed them away. "I don't see how it is your concern." "I wish I hadn't. I wish I'd never met him. I wish I weren't so ashamed." He nodded as though she'd answered him, as though a decision had been made.
"That is enough, then."
And a decision somehow had been. She tilted her head. "Enough." He stood, enormous, and somehow suddenly far more imposing, even more than he had been when he'd sent the door flying from its hinge, as though he were her king, and not simply a man she'd just met. And when he spoke, it was with a firm certainty that made her, for a heartbeat, believe his words.
"You shan't run."
Chapter 3 Fallen Angel Fisticuffs. Scottish Brute Serves Bromelian Braggart Scathing Set-Down. Alec took to the one place in London that had furniture built to accommodate a grown man. That the place also came with scotch imported from his own distillery, a ring ready for a fight if he felt so inclined. Card and carom tables and the handful of men he did not loathe was an added bonus.
Warnock returns.
The Marquis of Eversley, known to all the world as King, dropped into a large chair across from Alec.
Alert the news.
I am off the clock, Duncan West, newspaper magnate, said dryly from his own seat next to Alec.
Though I admit curiosity, having been summoned by the diluted Duke.
Membership in the Fallen Angel, Britain's most exclusive gaming hell, was by invitation only, and had little to do with fortune or title. Indeed, the nobs who frequented Whites and Brooks and Boodles were most often not invited to join the Angel. King was a member, as was West, despite the newspaperman having had a series of public disputes with the owners. As he called the two men friends, Alec found himself welcome at the club without membership, a fact for which he was grateful. Even he had to admit that they didn't make gaming hells quite the same way in Scotland, or anywhere else for that matter. Alec looked to King.
My thanks for the invitation.
His friend raised a brow.
As you virtually demanded it, there's no thanks necessary. I required a good drink. You could land yourself an invitation for membership, considering the Angel is the only place in London a man can get Stuart Scotch.
King's gaze settled on Alec's coat.
Assuming you found a better tailor, for God's sake, where did you get that coat?
Alec shrugged one tight shoulder.
Mossbond.
Eversley barked a laugh at the answer. A barely there town on the English side of the Scottish border.
It shows.
Alec ignored the retort.
Neither London clothing nor London clubs are necessary in Scotland.
You enjoy London clubs in London, however, West interjected.
I'm not addled, Alec said,
drinking deep before he leaned back in a massive leather chair and levelled West with a serious look. The man was owner of five of the most profitable publications in Britain, three of which were widely believed to be the pinnacle of modern journalism. But it was not the legitimate publications that interested Alec. It was the scandal sheet.
You're not off the clock tonight, he said to the newspaperman.
West sat back.
No, I assumed not. It seems I have a ward.
One of West's blonde brows rose.
Seems. My solicitor failed to inform me of such. That's a rather terrible solicitor, if you ask me. He took me at my word when I told him I was not interested in the London trappings of the dukedom.
King chuckled.
He thought the girl a trapping. Christ, don't tell her that. In my experience, women don't enjoy being thought of as such.
No, Alec didn't imagine Lily would enjoy that.
I know about her now, however. Everyone knows about her now, West said. Because of the scandal, Alec replied.
Because of her, West clarified. She's widely believed to be the most beautiful woman in London.
She might well be, Alec said.
He'd never seen one so beautiful.
She's not, King and West spoke in unison.
Alec rolled his eyes.
Your wives accepted, of course.
His friend smiled broadly, and West continued.
Miss Hargrove is also a curiosity. A beautiful woman attached to a dukedom, not officially out in society, but regularly seen on the arm of one of society's most venerated peacocks.
Alec resisted the distaste that came at the idea.
The source of the scandal, I assume. You don't wish to ask her for the particulars, West said.
A memory of Lily's obvious shame flashed.
I don't think she's interested in telling me.
Alec frowned.
What does that mean?
Only that they are never interested in telling us.
The newspaperman was married to a woman who'd been something of a scandal herself. Sister to a duke, unwed mother to a daughter, who was now as much a source of paternal pride to West as his own children.
Luckily, this one isn't to be my problem, Alec said. They're always our problem, King interjected. Not Lillian Horrigrove. Unlike the rest of London, I did not know of her 2 weeks ago, and I've no intention of knowing of her 2 weeks hence. She's to be the problem of the man who disgraced her.
He looked to West.
I simply need to know who that is.
West's gaze flickered to a faro table nearby, and he watched the game for a long moment. Alec followed suit. A man dressed all in white joined a threesome there, flashing a broad smile at the dealer and setting a massive amount of money on the table. Alec looked back at his friends.
Who is that?
King raised a brow at West, who sat back in his chair.
Shall I tell you what I know of your ward's circumstance?
Alec nodded, the faro table gone from his mind.
There is a painting.
Alec's brow furrowed.
What kind of painting?
A pause. Then King said,
allegedly, a nude.
Alec froze, the words summoning a great roar in his ears. Not words, word. Nude. Long limbs, full lips, high breasts, round hips, skin as soft as silk, and eyes like a silver storm.
No. A nude of whom?
West's hands went wide, as if to say, isn't it obvious? Of course it was. Alec shot forward in his chair.
Allegedly. King said allegedly.
West replied.
It's not alleged.
He turned on the newspaperman.
You have seen it.
I have not, but my wife has.
He paused.
Georgiana's on the selection committee of the Royal Academy.
Alec's heart pounded.
And it is Lillian.
West remained still, and Alec grasped for another solution.
How do we know she honestly sought for it? You and I both know that scandal is rarely truth.
It's true in this case, West said.
How do you know that?
West cut him a look.
Because I'm exceedingly good at my job, and I know the difference between gossip and fact.
Alec considered the woman he'd met hours earlier. Yes, she was beautiful, but she was not an idiot. He shook his head.
Not in this case, he said. I've met the girl. There is no way she posed for a nude. Love makes us do strange things.
King's words were simple and direct, and Alec hated the ring of truth in them. He did not want to acknowledge the truth. He did not want to imagine her nude for a man. He had enough trouble not imagining her nude, full stop. Nevertheless.
So the girl is in love.
It was the question he'd asked earlier, the one she'd answered without words. She hadn't needed words. He'd seen the sadness in her eyes, the wistfulness, as though she wished the man in question to appear there in her sitting room. He knew about wishing, and he knew better than most how false emotion could lead to some mediocre artist manipulating and mistreating her. He met West's eyes.
Where is the painting?
No one knows. It is set to be the final piece exhibited as part of the Royal Exhibition in 10 days' time, West said.
They select the best, Warnick. And this one, Georgiana says it is unmatched.
The most beautiful portrait ever painted, King interjected.
We don't know it is her.
She admitted it, Warnick.
Alec stilled again.
She did what?
She stormed the stage, caused a scene, professed her love, was rebuffed, in front of all London, West said. That alone was enough to destroy her in their eyes, but there are those who believe she is a part of it, that she and her artist worked together to ensure that the painting's reputation will precede it when it travels the country. The world.
Alec cursed and shook his head.
Why would she do that? Why ruin herself? The girl is locked away in my house, waiting for the funds to run.
Not that she would get them from him. He'd seen women run. He'd run himself. And he knew what happened to them when the running stopped. Lillian Hargrove would not run.
She wants the funds from you.
It was King who spoke this time. Alec shook his head.
In 10 days' time, she inherits pin money.
West swirled the scotch in his glass.
Fine timing, as a painting is revealed in 10 days' time.
Alec met his gaze.
What are you saying?
One lean shoulder lifted and fell.
Only imagine the Mona Lisa.
Alec huffed his irritation at the exercise.
Who cares a fig about the damn Mona Lisa?
A great many people, I imagine.
Alec cut him a look.
I grow weary of your obvious self-made brilliance, West.
The newspaperman smirked.
You're self-made, are you not? You only lack the brilliance.
A pity, considering the size of you, King needled. I suppose it's true what they say. We can't have everything.
Alec cursed them both.
Fine, the Mona Lisa. What of it?
Imagine how renowned the model would be if we knew her name.
Shock flared.
You think Lillian wishes for fame?
Memory flashed. Those grey eyes, storm clouds of sorrow.
No.
King raised a brow.
I am married to a dangerous daughter, living proof that some revel in fame.
Not 6 months earlier, the Marquess of Eversley had found a stowaway from one of London's most notorious families in his carriage. That stowaway had become an unexpected travelling companion, and after the story broke, the most scandalous member of the family, and Marchioness of Eversley.
It would have never married if not for me.
King cut him a look.
Oh, yes. Your part in the play was most definitely welcome. I didn't have to make amends for it at all.
You're lucky you had amends to make, Alec said. Someone had to knock some sense into you.
And for that, I will be forever grateful.
The words rang with a remarkable honesty.
Ugh,
Alec said, looking away.
There is nothing worse than a knob who loves his wife. Watch it, Duke. Half-hearted or no, you are a knob now. All you need is the wife.
It would never happen. He'd learned his lesson every time he'd considered it, every time he'd been passed over for money, for title, for refinement. Every time he'd been desired for his body and nothing else, the Scottish brute. He shook his head.
I've enough trouble with women, thank you. It's because you scare the wee things, King said,
mocking Alec's brogue.
This one isn't scared of me.
If anything, Lillian Hargrove was willing to battle him without hesitation.
She could do with a little more apprehension, honestly.
Another reason to believe she might be party to the scandal, West said. Lovely Lily, immortalized for all ages.
He loathed the moniker, not that he would show it.
I didn't know she called herself Lily, he replied,
drinking again, disliking the fact that these two knew more about her than he did. And he did not like that they might be right, that Lily might have destroyed herself for a man without hesitation. He thought back on the girl, on their meeting earlier. She didn't seem to be proud of her scandal, did not wear it as a badge of honour. He had seen the regret in her gaze, the shame there. Recognized it as keenly as he knew his own, he shook his head.
She was not part of it. Then the performance at the exhibition, King began.
West finished the thought.
Was not a performance at all.
He looked to Alec.
Poor girl. What now?
I plan to run. She wouldn't run. If he had to tear London apart, brick by brick, to ensure it, she would stay here and have her reputation restored. England would not chase her away or destroy her, the way it so easily destroyed those who did not suit it. One solution remained, safe and swift and utterly acceptable. Swiftness was most certainly a boon. Swiftness ended in Alec returning home, to Scotland, far from London and Lillian Hargrove, who was turning out to be more trouble than expected.
You could marry her.
King's words startled Alec from his thoughts.
Marry whom?
West smirked.
The London air is clouding your thoughts, Scott. The girl, Miss Hargrove. King is suggesting you marry her.
A vision flashed. Lily, beautiful and perfect in her simple grey dress, skin like porcelain and eyes flashing fire. There was a time when he would have proposed on the spot, blinded by her beauty and desperate to win her heart, to claim her for himself. despite his size, despite his hulk, despite his lack of grace. He knew better now. He was for baser acts than marrying.
Even if I weren't her guardian, King interrupted. What nonsense! If I had a pound for every guardian who married his ward, I'd be rich as sin.
You are already rich as sin, Alec replied. Either way, she wouldn't have me.
It took a moment for him to realize that West and King were staring at him.
What is it?
West found his tongue first.
I think I speak for us both when I say the girl would get down on her knees and thank her maker you proposed.
The Scottish brute, so big, so beastly, only for working days. The memories burned. How many English women had denied him anything more than sex, held themselves for another when it came to marriage, even if he were interested in the girl, even if she were more than a troublesome beauty keeping him from home? He shook his head.
I am not the husband in question.
King watched him, he knew, but he did not look to the man who had known him since their days in school, not even when the Marquis said,
What then? I am a duke, am I not?
King lingered over the last of his scotch.
With a patent to prove it. And dukes are allowed to do their will.
West smirked.
It is a perk of the title, I am told.
Alec nodded.
The man who ruined her, he marries her.
A wild cheer from the faro table nearby punctuated the words. Alec looked toward the noise, noting the man in the white coat and trousers once more. It appeared that the peacock had lost a massive round, if the shock on his face were any indication. So it was in gaming hells, one moment up, the next down. So too it was when it came to women, Lily's scoundrel would soon discover. Alec turned back to his friends.
He marries her if I have to put a pistol to his head and force him to do it.
King blinked.
You might have to.
Well, being a brutish Scot will help with that. The plan is impenetrable.
He turned to West.
A name, if you please.
I shall do one better,
West said, finishing his drink and indicating the card table.
Name and location. You seek Derek Hawkins, artist and theatrical genius. The Vision in White, currently nursing his loss.
It was not possible. Alec could not imagine this man conversing with Lillian, let alone... No, there was no way that too honest woman would be caught dead with such an obvious peacock. He looked to King for confirmation.
No,
King nodded.
Indeed. Artist, theatrical genius, and proper arse.
He didn't know what he'd imagined. Someone stronger, less of a dandy. Alec wouldn't have been surprised by someone devastatingly handsome, or someone with incredible wealth, or a man who oozed disgusting charm. But this man, this pompous peacock, this man didn't seem fit to cloak a puddle and aid Lily's walk through town.
Do you love him?
Alec had expected someone deserving of her. Suddenly, his plan did not seem so perfect. He looked to his friends and asked the only question that came to mind.
Why?
Before they could answer, the card table erupted in another commotion. From what Alec could see, the Hawkins character was attempting to negotiate a loan with the casino. The major domo had been summoned, and Hawkins was saying,
My name will soon be known throughout the world. How dare you refuse me?
The casino employee adjusted his spectacles and shook his head.
I assure you, Hawkins blustered. Your employers will be livid if they discover that you've denied me funds. I shall be the most famous Englishman there ever was. Newton, Milton, Shakespeare. They will pale in comparison to Hawkins. They will beg to honour me here in this place, and I will decline because of your...
He waved a hand at the major domo's eyewear.
Obvious short-sightedness.
Good Lord, he's worse than I imagined, Alec said.
He's only warming up, West said, calling for more drink. If you don't have the blunt, you don't play, Hawkins,
one of the other men said, obviously eager to return to the game.
I have the blunt. I simply don't carry it with me.
He turned to the Major Domo again.
Are you deaf as well as blind? Do you not understand that I'm the greatest artist of all time?
The table erupted in jeering hoots, and Alec could not stop himself from laughing at the insufferable man. He looked to his friends.
You've the story wrong, he said. No way in hell is this man her scandal.
Lillian wouldn't be able to stomach more than a minute with this pompous arse. She would see the truth of him immediately. The arse continued, entirely sure of himself.
I'm Derek Hawkins. I do not exaggerate the quality of my work. My genius is more than any the world has ever seen.
Alec looked to King.
Is he always this way? If by this way you mean a pompous prick, yes, came the dry reply. He courted my sister-in-law for a time. I cannot imagine why she refused his suit.
I can't force Lillian to marry him.
I thought she loved him.
I don't care, Alec said.
And he didn't. There was no possible way he was wedding her to this clown. He was going to have to deal with the situation in a different way.
I demand an audience with an owner, Hawkins insisted.
And as though he had been willed into being, one of the owners of the casino appeared. The tall, ginger-haired financier of the club spoke with utter calm.
Hawkins, how many times must we tell you you are too unlucky for us to bank you without collateral?
You haven't any understanding of art, Cross, Hawkins declared. Bring me someone with an eye.
He fairly begged for another owner.
Bourne, or Chase, he'll see reason. My collateral is my name, my work. I am the star of this year's exhibition. Did you not know that?
You have mistaken me for one who cares about this year's exhibition.
The man called Cross was unimpressed.
You leave and return with funds, and we'll discuss a seat at the table. For now, the game resumes without you.
He turned to indicate that the dealer should deal the cards.
Your mistake. I shan't grace you with my presence once the painting shows. It's the greatest nude since Rubens.
Alec gritted his teeth, the word nude ricocheting through him.
Better than Rubens. I am Leonardo. I am Michelangelo. I'm better. You could have enjoyed the profits yourself. And now you will beg me to return.
No one has even seen this legendary painting, Hawkins, someone said. Come back in 10 days when we've a chance to decide for ourselves precisely what kind of genius you are.
Hawkins turned on the man.
You know it will be revealed in 10 days, which tells me you're planning to have a look.
A lovely lily in the flesh.
You're damn right I do.
Alec was on his feet, fists clenched, before he could think.
Warnock.
King was beside him in an instant.
Careful, you shall make it worse.
West did not move from his chair to warn.
Mine is not the only rag you need worry about, Duke.
Later, Alec would be proud of himself that he did not tear the men limb from limb as originally intended. Instead, he spoke, the solution coming even as he spoke the words, thick with angry brogue.
I shall spot the artist.
The room seemed to still, as every person in attendance turned to face him.
Who are you? Hawkins asked,
confusion and relief warring in the face of Alec's appearance. Alec spread his hands wide in innocent affectation.
You look your gift horse in the mouth.
No, Hawkins said. Not necessarily, but I like to know to whom I am indebted.
Alec nodded.
Does it matter? Mine is the only offer of blonde there is for you tonight.
Hawkins' gaze narrowed, his head tilting, as he considered Alec, his gaze settling on wide shoulders in a too-tight jacket, the ill-fitting sleeves of the garment, his thick burr.
And if I say yes, what comes next?
Then you play your game.
Hawkins tilted his head.
And?
And if you win, you win.
And if I lose,
then I take back my money, with interest.
Hawkins' gaze narrowed.
What interest?
The painting.
Hawkins blinked.
The painting for the exhibition?
The very one.
Hawkins' gaze flickered to King and West, where they watched the interaction. Recognition flared, and he returned his attention to Alec. The man was less of a fool than Alec had given him credit for.
The Duke of Warnick, Lily's disappeared guardian.
Lily, he lowed the name on this dandy's lips.
Miss Hargrove to you, Alec snapped.
Hawkins was already beyond the name.
I never would have recognized you. They say you're big, but I would have thought you could have found a tailor with your fortune. The cut of that coat, it's abominable.
Hawkins shrugged and straightened his sleeve with a disdainful laugh.
Do you wish the money or not?
You think spotting me the funds for cards will buy you a masterpiece?
Hawkins' chest puffed out with pride and misplaced certainty.
It's a work of genius. Not that I expect a man cut from your cloth to understand what that means.
He paused, somehow looking up at Alec and also down his nose.
It will steal breath for the rest of time.
Alec took a step toward him.
I shall show you what it is like to lose your breath. Warnick.
King again. Alec heard the rest of the warning. Don't make it worse. The men nearby had tripled in number, smelling a fight in the air. He took a deep breath.
10,000.
The number was outrageous, more than the painting could possibly be worth. Something flashed in Hawkins' eyes, something like greed.
It is not for sale.
Everything is for sale, Alec said.
He knew it better than anything.
20,000.
A collective gasp rose from the men assembled. £20,000 would keep Hawkins for years, for the rest of his life. But the offer was a mistake. It revealed too much of Alec's desire, too much of his willingness to save the girl. It put Hawkins in power, damn it. The artist smirked.
If only you'd been here a year earlier, think of what your misplaced sense of responsibility might have prevented.
Alec did not move, refused to rise to the bait, refused to pluck the dandy's head from his shoulders as he deserved. Hawkins continued.
If only you were different, Duke. You might have saved her.
Hawkins couldn't have known the words would set Alec off, couldn't have predicted their power. His fists clenched, every muscle tightening, threatening to attack, desperate to do so.
From your actions, you mean?
Light came into Hawkins' eyes.
I assure you, Your Grace, she was party to it, he said,
the words filled with foul suggestion.
She was desperate for it.
The men surrounding them hooted and jeered at the words, at the summary destruction of Lillian, the chortles and shouts turning into gasps when Alec moved, a dog loosed from his chain. He lifted Hawkins from his feet by the collar of his elaborate topcoat as though he weighed nothing.
That was a mistake.
Put me down, Hawkins squeaked,
his hands clawing at Alec's fist. West rose.
Not here, Warnick. Not in front of the world.
Alec tossed the vermin to the ground. Looming over Hawkins, he said once more.
How much?
Hawkins scrambled to his feet.
You can't just manhandle me.
I don't care one bit who you are. How much for the picture?
You'll never get it, Hawkins spat,
high-pitched and terrified, filled with false bravado.
I wouldn't take your money if you offered 10 times as much, you Scottish thug. You're a perfect match, as cheap as she is, just luckier.
The words reminded Alec of his intentions, that there had been a time when he'd actually planned to force this bastard to marry Lily, as though he'd ever let him near her again, as though he'd ever allow him to breathe the same air as her.
I have been more than polite, he said,
stalking Hawkins back as the men assembled chattered and grumbled. A voice rose over the crowd.
£20 on the Scot!
Alec ignored it.
I was willing to pay you for the painting, a fair price, more than fair.
No one will take that wager. Look at him. Fists the size of hams.
Those fists clenched and unclenched.
I'd pay just to see the fight. I don't put it past him to force Hawkins to the altar. £10 on that.
Hawkins could not keep his mouth shut.
As though I'd take low-born, lonely, sad Lillian Hargrove. As though a genius marries a muse. I could have anyone. I could have royalty.
Take him to the ring, Warnick. Show him your displeasure.
I don't need the ring.
Alec wasn't displeased. He was murderous.
Listen to me and listen well, he said,
low and barely discernible through his angry brogue.
Commit my words to memory, because I want you to spend the next 2 weeks wondering how I'm going to do it.
Do what? Hawkins was terrified.
Destroy you.
Hawkins blinked, and Alec saw his throat working, as though he was considering a reply. Finally, he shook his head, turned on his heel, and ran, straight through the curtain that marked the doorway to the club, and out into the London night, chased by the laughter and jeers of the rest of the membership of the gaming hell. After several long seconds, King appeared at Alec's shoulder.
It seems he is not an imbecile after all. Running was a good choice.
I plan to run. Lily's words echoed through him, full of desolation, reminding him of another who had run and been destroyed. He shook his head.
That man drives her from London over my decaying corpse.
West joined them.
Then you no longer intend him to wed the girl?
The words summoned an image of Lily in Hawkins' arms, her hair spilling down her back, tangled in his fingers, her lips on his, and Alec wanted to upend the nearest card table. He settled on.
Not for all the blunt in London.
What then?
It is no matter who she marries, only that she does.
King and West looked to each other, then back to Alec, now firmly resolved in his modified plan. He waited for one of them to speak. When they did not, he said,
What of it?
After a long moment, West replied,
Nothing. It sounds an excellent plan.
King raised a brow.
I cannot imagine how it could possibly go wrong.
Alec heard the sarcasm in the other man's tone, and in scathing Gaelic told him precisely what he could do with himself before turning on his heel and heading for the club's boxing ring. He could do with a fight. Chapter 4. Diluted Duke and Dogs Resume Residence. Lily should have known when she saw the maid scurrying past the foot of the stairs at 8 o'clock in the morning that something was amiss. She should have sensed it from the quivering silence of the house, as though someone of import was present. But she didn't. Not until she smelled the ham. For 5 years, Lily had descended the same stairs at the same time to take tea and toast in the breakfast room. It was not that she preferred tea and toast for breakfast, simply that it was the food that was offered. And even then, there were days when the cook forgot her and she had to go looking for breakfast. Those were the better days, honestly, because they allowed her to enter the kitchens and be in the company of others. Lily lived in the margins of life at 45 Berkeley Square. She was neither nobility nor servant, too high-born to be welcome in the lives of the staff, not high-born enough to be honoured by them. For the first year, she'd ached for their friendship, but by the second, she'd simply become a part of this dance, weaving through them, not unwelcome, but more invisible. Though she'd disliked the disinterest for years, recently she'd become comforted by it. After all, Lily was no longer invisible beyond this house. She was altogether too visible beyond this house. The fact remained, however, that the invisible did not receive ham for breakfast. And so it was that, as the maid disappeared down the long hallway and the salty scent of cured meat beckoned to Lily from the breakfast room, she realized that she was not alone in the house, that the Duke had decided to take up residence. She pushed open the door to find him behind a newspaper, a plate piled high in front of him, nothing but shirt sleeves visible. Shirt sleeves? The man didn't even have the courtesy to dress for dining. Therefore, Lily did not have the patience for courtesy. You slept here? Alec Stewart did not lower the newsprint when she crossed the threshold.
Good morning, Lillian.
The words rumbled through her, thick with a Scots brogue that she told herself she did not care for, as it was too low, too languid, far too familiar. Of course, it had to be familiar, as the man was sitting at her dining table as though he owned the place, which he did, of course. She stopped halfway down the large dining table and repeated herself. You're not staying. That's when she noticed the dogs seated on either side of him, two enormous grey wolfhounds, all wiry fur and lolling tongues, one with several inches of slobber hanging from his jowl. And they are certainly not staying.
You don't care for dogs.
He did not lower his paper. She did, actually. She'd always rather wished she had one. They are dogs. I thought they were small horses.
This is Angus, he said,
one hand peeking out from behind the paper to stroke the massive head on his left.
And this is Horridy.
He delivered similar care to the other.
They're kittens. You'll like them.
I shan't have a chance to, as you are not staying. There are 8 other residences in London, Your Grace, not to mention wherever you've laid your head the other times you've been to town. I'm sure you can find another that will suit. He lowered one corner of his paper.
How do you know I've been to town before now?
Good God, she said. What happened to your face?
A lady wouldn't notice.
His right eye was swollen shut, black, and a wicked shade of green. Is the lady in question blind? One side of his swollen lip lifted in a barely there smile.
You should see the other man.
He returned to his paper. She should be grateful for the beating, for the way it took away from those supremely distracting lips. She'd never in her life even noticed a man's lips before, and now all she could think was how she hoped the swelling was not permanent. It would be a tragedy to ruin such a mouth. Not that she was interested in his mouth. Not at all. She cleared her throat. What did he do to you?
Nothing, he said,
as though the entire morning were perfectly ordinary.
I went looking for a spar.
Men would forever perplex her. Whatever for?
I found myself irritated.
He set the paper aside. Her eyes went wide. You were wearing tartan. A deep red plaid cut a diagonal swath up his torso, over his shoulder, where it was met with another drape of wool and fastened with a pewter pin. The garment only underscored how ill-fitting he was here, in this house, in this world he'd inherited so unwillingly, in this world that she'd so desperately wanted before she'd so desperately wanted to be rid of it. He lifted his paper again.
I find it more comfortable.
Are you wearing trousers? The words were out before she could rein them in. His good eye met hers with a piercing brown gaze.
No.
She'd never in her life been so embarrassed as in the wake of that single, simple word. She wished to crawl beneath the table. She might have done, if doing so wouldn't have brought her entirely too close to the source of her embarrassment. Thank heavens, he changed the topic.
You did not answer me.
She couldn't remember the question. She couldn't remember any question in the entirety of her life but her last. She was mortified.
How do you know I've come to town before now? He repeated.
I read the papers, just as you do, she said. You're a particular favourite when you arrive in town.
Oh,
he said, as though he did not know it already. Oh, yes, she said, recalling the way the scandal sheets described him, the lady's dark dream. She supposed he was a particular specimen, if one liked the tall, broad, and brutish sort of thing. Lily did not like it, not at all. The whole of London is warned to put out the sturdy furniture in the event you happen along for tea. A muscle in his cheek tightened slightly, and Lily was surprised that the triumph she expected to feel knowing that she'd struck true did not come. Instead, she felt slightly guilty. She should apologize, she knew, but instead bit her tongue in the long, uncomfortable moment that followed, during which she remained still as stone, coolly regarding her. They might have stood there for an age, in a battle of will, if not for the long strand of drool that dropped from one dog's jowl to the carpet below. Lily looked to the spot before saying, "That carpet cost £300.
"What did you say?"
She smirked at his shock. "And now it has been christened with your beast's saliva."
"Why in hell did you spend £300 on a carpet for people to walk on?"
"You gave me leave to decorate the house as I saw fit."
"I did no such thing."
"Ah, of course," she replied. "Your solicitor did. And if I am to live in such a cage, my lord, it may as well be gilded, don't you think?"
"We return to the bird metaphor."
"Clipped wings and all," she said. He lifted his paper once more, his reply dry as sand.
"It seems to me that your wings work very well, little wren."
She stilled, not liking the unsettling knowledge in the words, returned to the original topic. "You took no interest in the house, your grace, so I see no need for you to live in it." He replied from behind his newspaper.
"I find I have an interest in it now."
The cool statement reminded her of why she'd entered the breakfast room to begin with. She took a deep breath. "You are not..."
"Staying. Yes, I am not without ability to hear."
She didn't doubt his sense of hearing. She doubted his sense, full stop. But it did not matter. The house was large enough for her to avoid him until her funds arrived and she was free of him. And London. Before she could say as much, however, they were interrupted by the arrival of the butler, Hudgens.
"Your Grace,"
the ancient man croaked as he doddered into the room, leaning heavily on a cane, a slim parcel under his arm.
"A missive has arrived for you."
Lily turned to assist the butler, always half doubting his ability to get from one location to the next without hurting himself, removing the parcel from his hands.
"Hudgens, you mustn't overtax yourself."
The butler looked to her, clearly insulted, and snatched the parcel back.
"Miss Hargrove, I am one of London's best butlers. I can certainly carry a parcel to the master of the house."
The haughty words sent heat rushing through her, embarrassment of her own. His quick retort did not simply reveal that he'd been insulted, but also served to remind her of her place, neither above nor below stairs, and certainly not permitted to instruct the staff in front of the Duke. She immediately searched for a way to make amends as he doddered toward the Duke, setting the envelope on the table.
"Thank you, Hudgens,"
Alex said quietly, the low burr rumbling across the room.
"Before you leave, there is another matter with which you might assist me."
Lily was forgotten. The butler straightened as much as his aging bones would allow, obviously eager to prove he was more than able to help.
"Of course, Your Grace. Whatever you require, the entire staff is here for your aid."
"As this is a matter of serious import, I would not wish for any but you to aid me."
Lily turned to the Duke with a frown, wanting to underscore Hudgens' frailty. To make the point that the butler no longer served in the traditional sense, that despite his rising and dressing the part each day, he did little more than answer the door when he was able to hear it, which was becoming less and less frequent. Hudgens had earned a retirement of sorts, comfortable and quiet. Could the Scotsman not see it?
"I require a complete accounting of the items of value in several rooms of the house," Warnick said. "Paintings, furniture, sculpture, silver."
He trailed off, then added,
"Carpets."
"What on earth? Why?" Lily's brow furrowed.
"Of course, Your Grace,"
the butler replied.
Not all the rooms, you understand. Only the critical locations. The main receiving rooms, the sitting rooms, the library, the conservatory, and this one.
Of course, Your Grace.
I should think it would take you no longer than a month to produce such an accounting. I should like it to be as thorough as possible.
It should not take the man more than a week, honestly, but Lily did not say as much.
That should be a fine amount of time, Hutchins replied.
Excellent. That is all.
Your Grace.
Hutchins bowed ever so slightly and dotted out of the room, Lily watching, waiting for him to finally, finally close the door behind him before she turned on the Duke.
For a man who is so keen to eschew a title, you certainly enjoy ordering the staff about, she said, approaching him once more. What an inane request! A full accounting of the contents of the house. You've estates valued at literally millions of pounds, Your Grace, and Ham.
She hadn't meant to say the last bit. He tilted his head.
Did you say Ham?
She shook her head.
It's irrelevant. What do you care what is on the walls of the sitting room in a home you did not know existed last week?
I don't, he said.
She went on, barely hearing the reply.
Not to mention the tedium of such a task. He'll be occupying each of those rooms for days, considering his unwillingness to end his servitude and live out his life in...
She stopped. He tossed a piece of ham to the dog on his left.
Oh, she said, and a crust of bread to the one on his right. The sitting rooms, the receiving rooms, the library, here.
He did not reply.
All rooms with comfortable furniture. A month to catalogue the contents.
He is a proud man. There is no need for him to know he's been pastured.
She blinked.
That was kind of you.
Don't worry. I shall continue to play the beast with you.
One large hand stroked over a dog's head, and Lily found herself transfixed by it, by its sun-weathered skin, and the long white scar that began an inch below his first knuckle. She stared at it for a long moment, wondering if it was warm, knowing it was.
Tell me, is it just the old man, or do all the servants overlook you?
She lifted her chin, hating that he'd noticed.
I don't know what you mean.
He watched her for a long moment before lifting the parcel from the table. She watched as he slid one long finger beneath the wax seal and opened it, extracting a sheaf of papers.
I thought you did not read your correspondence.
Be careful, Lillian, he said. You do not wish for me to ignore this particular missive.
Her heart began to pound.
Why?
He set it aside, far enough away that she could not see it.
I wrote to Settlesworth after you apprised me of your plans.
She caught her breath.
My funds?
My funds, if we're being honest.
She cut him a look.
For 9 days.
He sat back in his chair.
Have you never heard of catching more flies with honey?
I've never understood why one need catch a fly, she said, deliberately pasting a wide, winning smile on her face. But it is done, then. I shall hereafter think of you as a very large insect.
She pointed to the papers.
Why are my funds of interest?
He set a hand on the stack.
At first, it was just that, interest.
Her gaze lingered on that great bronzed hand on the document that somehow seemed to feel more important than anything in the world, that document that clarified her plans for freedom. She was so distracted by the promise of that paper that she nearly didn't hear it. The past tense. Her attention snapped to him, to his brown eyes, watching her carefully, unsettlingly.
And then what?
He made a show of feeding a piece of toast to one of the dogs. Hardy, she thought. No, Angus. It didn't matter.
I met a man last evening. Pompous and arrogant and obnoxious beyond words.
Her heart pounded with devastating speed.
Are you certain you were not looking into a mirror?
He cut her a look.
No, I was looking at Derek Hawkins.
Her heart stopped. Luckily, she did not have to speak, because he continued.
I went looking for him.
Which meant he knew about everything.
about her idiocy, about her desperation, about her willingness to do whatever a man asked of her, about her naivete. She went hot with shame, hating herself, hating him for resurrecting it. She swallowed. Why?
Believe it or not, he said,
and she could hear the surprise in his tone.
I intended to force him to marry you.
What had he said? She was certain she'd misheard him. Panic rose. Was he mad? You didn't.
I did not, as a matter of fact, he said. Once I met the man, I realized that there was no way on green earth that I would allow you to cleave yourself to him.
Cleave. She hated the word, hated the roughness of it, the way it seemed rife with desperation, with obsession, with unpleasant, simpering longing.
You said you loved me.
The shame came again, flooding in on the memory of the words, high and nasal and desperate, in front of all London, punctuated by their mocking laughter, with his. And now Alec Stewart, 21st Duke of Warwick, the only man in London who had not known the circumstances of her shame, knew them, and worse, thought to save her. Panic rose.
I never asked to be cleaved to him.
I am told you did, lass, quite publicly.
She closed her eyes at the words, as though if she could not see him, she could not hear the truth. He knew everything about what had happened with Derek. But somehow he couldn't see the truth of it, that everything she'd ever desired, everything for which she'd ever dreamed, it was all impossible now. She'd made it so. Her fists clenched at her side, and she opened her eyes to find him staring at her, as though he could see right into her soul. She looked away immediately. You would be surprised what ruination in front of all of London will do to one's desires. There was a long moment as he waited for her to look at him again. She could not do it. Finally, he let out a long breath and said,
"For what it is worth, Lillian, Hawkins is probably the most loathsome man I've ever had the misfortune to meet."
She looked to him, willing him to believe her.